the final chapter of the second canto. First, the 10 topics of the Bhagavatam were described to show how the 9 topics, the prime topics, they were all dependent upon Ashraya, or the Lord, Bhagavan, Sri Krishna. Then, the Ariyatma, Aridaivaka, and Aribhautika Purushas were described to show how the Lord is the only one who is independent, and the living entity is only dependent upon, is forever dependent upon Him. Sounds like Harvey's having a wrestling match with a tape. Sounds like it. So, then, the jiva, the pure jiva, is covered by so many identifications. He identifies with the body, and that body, that Adibhautika Purusha, is truly, the senses are controlled by the Adidaivaka Purushas. The demigods, they control the senses. So these are all coverings over the living entity. And these coverings are manifested from the Virata Rupa, or the universal form of the Lord. The demigods, the senses and the sense objects, they're all manifested from the Virata Rupa. So this is what we heard yesterday. And then, towards the end of the explanation, it described these coverings of the mind, the false ego, the material nature, the sense organs, the 3 modes of material nature, how these are all coverings, and what they are, the coverings, only cover the eyes of the living entity, and they disallow him, inhibit his understanding that Krishna is that universal form. That universal form is a manifestation of the Lord. They cannot see that. We cannot see that. Because the covering is so thick. Rather, all we see is the limitation of our senses, the limitation of our mind. We cannot see something as subtle as the Virata Rupa. Prabhupada explained that in the purport. Because they have no eyes of transcendental vision, because they cannot see the personality of Godhead, they therefore deny the existence of the Lord and the transcendental form of the Lord. Actually, the conditioned souls, Prabhupada explains, are covered by the illusory cloud of matter. So this matter, even though when we think of a cloud, we think of something very ethereal and having no substance. So in one sense, Maya has no substance, as the shadow has no substance in one sense. But it is so thick that we cannot see Krishna, although that Virata Rupa, and although all the senses and the Adidaivaka person and the Adiatmika person and the Adibhautika person, they all rest upon Krishna. We cannot see Krishna because of these coverings. So, beyond the coverings of the Virata Purusha, these gross material coverings, which are manifestations of Krishna's energy, they are not Krishna exactly, they are transformations of his energy. So beyond that, those coverings, we heard, is another manifestation of Krishna, which is his impersonal feature, which is eternal, so subtle and fine, having no beginning, no intermediate stage, no end. There are no transformations in it. It is qualityless. And this subtle aspect of the Lord, really, it either refers to the impersonal, which pervades everything, or it refers to the non-material qualities aspect the Lord actually has. So these two aspects of the Lord, the gross material energy, which is the Virata Rupa, which is a pantheistical understanding of God, meaning that everything, meaning that nothing is separate from God. So therefore, in everything one can see the Supreme. So that is what Krishna in one sense recommends in the 7th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, and in the 8th chapter, and the 9th chapter, and the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, those middle chapters. How to see Krishna in everything. And actually, as we heard in the Chaturshloki Bhagavatam, that one can actually see Krishna in everything if Krishna himself, not just Krishna's energy, but one can see Krishna in everything if one is situated in prema, love for Krishna. But this verse is not so much speaking on that level, but speaking in the sense that one, that this is a covering that comes from Krishna, so therefore it is not different from Krishna. And above that is the subtle, most subtle spiritual energy, which ultimately the Brahma Jyoti, which ultimately all matter rests upon. So then, in text 35, Srila Sukadeva Goswami explains that those two forms, or Sridhar Swami first explains, those two aspects of the Lord, the impersonal and the pantheistical material, they are forbidden in this verse, because the verse says neither of the above forms, as just described from the material angle of vision, is accepted by the pure devotees of the Lord who know Him well. Know Him well means know Him in His transcendental feature. Therefore, in text 36, He, the personality of Godhead, He Himself manifests, not a formless, qualityless aspect of Him, but He Himself manifests in a transcendental form, being the subject of His transcendental name, qualities, pastimes, entourage, and transcendental variegatedness. Although He is unaffected by such activities, He appears to be so engaged. He is unaffected by anything material. So in this verse, which was the final verse that we read yesterday, it describes how the Lord Himself is the supreme understanding of Him is this form, the personal form of Krishna. And although He, through His energies, covers the living entity through the manifestation of the Virata Rupa and the Adidaivaka, Adibhautika, and Adiatmika persons, Purushas, but yet that aspect has a more subtle aspect, in which is the fact that the spiritual potency of the Lord is everywhere, and that material potency rests upon the spiritual potency, but those both are inferior to the transcendental form of the Lord. So that was the last verse that we read yesterday. Now there is one line in that verse, which is Bhagavan Brahma Rupa Drik. And Srila Sridhar Swami says that this means that this verse describes how the Lord assumes the form of Lord Brahma for the creation of the world. That is the meaning of Brahma Rupa Drik. Bhagavan, the Lord, assumes the form of Lord Brahma to create the world. And Prabhupada actually explains this at the end of the purport, that the Lord has His transcendental form, as we heard in the Chaturshloki Bhagavatam, that He Himself exists in Vaikuntha, and through His expansions, He expands Himself and manifests the material world through Karana Dakshay Vishnu, Garbha Dakshay Vishnu, and Chira Dakshay Vishnu, the different forearm forms. But He Himself remains aloof. So when the actual dealing with the material world is to be done, The Lord, Krishna, doesn't do that directly, but he empowers. Either he does it through Vishnu, or he empowers Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma. So Lord Brahma is the empowerment of the Lord's creative potency, because unless he was empowered in that way, he could not create the material world. And what we heard in the last chapter basically is the process that Lord Brahma, due to his desire for serving Krishna, became empowered. And this is the prerequisite for gaining the power of the Lord to do something. One must have that fully 100% sincere desire to serve Krishna in a particular way, and then Krishna will empower one, or he can empower one. So Lord Brahma has this desire, and he performed austerities, and Krishna empowered him. This is what we heard in the ninth chapter for the creation of the material world. So that Brahma Rupa Drik, that means that Brahma, it's actually Krishna working through Brahma for the creation of the material world. So he's engaged in that way. Krishna engages Brahma in this way, he does his work. So who is doing it? Is it Brahma or is it Krishna who is creating the material world? It's Krishna using the agency of Brahma. So in text 37 through 40, there's an explanation, because we talked about the material world, and now it's going to describe the living entities placed within the material world, having gained the senses as was described that we heard yesterday. They gained particular senses according to their karma. 10 knowledge acquiring senses, the 5 knowledge acquiring senses, the 5 active senses, the mind, etc. Everyone achieves these senses according to our karma, and then one is placed, because this is a preliminary discussion of the creation of the material world and what Brahma does. So in these 37 to 40 verses, so Maharaj Prickett is told by Sukadev Goswami, "Know from me that all living entities are created by the Supreme Lord, through Lord Brahma, according to their past deeds. This includes Brahma and his sons Daksha, the periodical heads like Vaivasvata Manu, the Manus, the demigods like Indra, Chandra, Varuna, the great sages like Bhrigu, Vyasa, and Vashishta, the inhabitants of the Pitraloka, the Siddhaloka, the Charanas, Gandharvas, Vidyadharas." So it's going downward, because according in the mode of goodness, one gets a position where there is more enjoyment and gets a higher position where there's enjoyment. So, and then as one goes downward, one gets a lower position where there is more misery. So the universe is created. They get those bodily parts that were described as on the universal form, all the senses and the body and the muscles, etc. There, it's like an assembly plant almost that creates all the parts, and then Lord Brahma assembles them for the living entities according to the living entities' karma. So these are the different types of living entities. Then it goes from the kinaras, the angels, the serpents, the monkey-shaped kimpurushas, the human beings, the inhabitants of Matriloka, the demons, the pisachas, ghost spirits, lunatics and evil spirits, the good and evil stars, the goblins, the animals in the forest, the birds, the household animals, the reptiles, the mountains, the moving and standing living entities, the living entities born from embryos, from eggs, from perspirations, from seeds, and all others, whether they be on the water, the land, or the sky, in happiness and distress, or mixed happiness and distress, all of them, according to their past deeds, are created by the Lord. So the bodies of all these living entities are assembled by Krishna, but not really by Krishna, but by Krishna's agents. That will be explained a little bit later on. So what entitles one to a particular type of body. Even if we look around in this room, we can see that different of us, we're all souls, but we have different shaped bodies, different style bodies, different abilities, different ears, different skins, different fingers, different everything. Even though we all have eyes, we have ears, we have hair, we have muscles, we have this, we have that. But all individually given to us according to our karma by Krishna. Some in this world, some living entities have one kind of a body that affords so much enjoyment, and others have bodies that just simply do nothing but give them misery. So therefore, Prabhupada explains in the purport to this verse, some of the living entities are relatively happy in better conditions of life, whereas others are in distressed conditions of life. But factually, none of them are actually happy in the material conditioned life. No one can be happy in prison life, because remember, the point being that the living entity is trapped in these things. These things are coverings. And we are trying to enjoy through these coverings. Just imagine if you were trying to eat but your tongue had a glove on it. Or you're trying to feel some silk and you're wearing gloves. Or your nose, you're trying to smell something but your nose was inhibited. Or trying to hear and your ears are closed. So the soul itself is covered. And the covering is so deep and thick. So therefore, even if one's covering is thin as compared to another whose covering is thick, the soul cannot enjoy, because this is the prison. So no one can be happy in prison life, although one may be a first class prisoner and another a third class prisoner. So if one has a very good cell, or another one is cramped up in solitary confinement in a very little cell, and someone may be just confined to house arrest, or a high class prison, what do they call minimum security prisons. But if one is in prison, one is restricted so much that one can't be happy. If one tries to be happy as a high class prisoner, one is just deluding himself. The thing, point being that one should get out. So the intelligent person should not try to be promoted, thinking that the goal is to be promoted from a third class fit prisoner to a first class prison. But one should try to be released from the prison altogether. One may be promoted to a first-class prisoner, but the same first-class prisoner is again degraded to a third-class prisoner in the next term. One should try to be free from prison life and go back home, back to Godhead. That is the real goal for all types of living entities. So the jiva, he is caught and covered. And he himself and all the coverings, again, they come from the Supreme Lord, who is the Ashraya. He is the only independent one. So these points are being described. So according to the different modes of material nature, text 41 says, the mode of goodness, the mode of passion, and the mode of darkness, there are different living creatures who are known as demigods, human beings, and hellish living entities. O king, even a particular mode of nature being mixed with the other two is divided into three. So there are so many varieties, just like there's the three primary colors, which are yellow, red, and blue, right? Yes? And then those are mixed together. You mix the blue and the yellow and you get green, right? And you mix this one and that one. There's so many different shades and so many different varieties. Two parts blue, 11 parts red, 6 parts yellow, 15 parts this. So all the living entities have these different mixtures of the modes of material nature, goodness, passion, ignorance, and are therefore awarded a different body. And then according to the body, according to the modes, according to what they deserve, they are known as demigods, human beings, and hellish living entities. So Prabhupada explains in the purport. Now here, each of us, these are very important points. So he's just explained that we are covered, controlled by the modes of material nature, and we should get out. Now here we are, individuals, controlled by different varieties of modes of material nature. Now, it's very easy to say get out, but how to get out? How to become elevated? How to become detached? How to develop the desire to get out instead of just to enjoy a more subtle pleasure in the prison? So Prabhupada will address this point here. Nothing is stereotyped. One can change his habit by good or bad association. One has to become intelligent enough to discriminate between good and bad. The best association is the service of the devotees of the Lord. And by that association, one can become the highest qualified man by the grace of the Lord's pure devotee. As we have already seen in the life of Sri Narada Muni, he became the topmost devotee of the Lord simply by the association of pure devotees of the Lord. By birth, he was the son of a maidservant and had no knowledge of his father, no academic education, even of the lowest status. So he was born into a situation that was not of the highest in the prison house, but somewhere not very high at all. But simply by associating with the devotees and eating the remnants of their foodstuffs, he developed gradually the transcendental quality of the devotees. So to change the qualities, the modes of nature, goodness, passion, ignorance, the word is guna, triguna. And guna means qualities. So to change the quality, one has to associate with devotees. By such association, his taste for chanting and hearing the transcendental glories of the Lord became prominent. And because the glories of the Lord are none different from the Lord, he got direct association with the Lord by means of sound representation. He actually, because of his desire and because of Krishna's mercy, Krishna came to him in the form of sound. So this was described in the first canto. Similarly, there's the life of Ajamil, that will be in the sixth canto. We'll hear that if Krishna allows. Who was the son of a Brahmana and was educated and trained properly in the discharge of the duties of a Brahmana, but who, in spite of all this, because he contacted the bad association of a prostitute, was put into the path of the lowest quality of a chandala, or the last position for a human being. Therefore, so in other words, one can be elevated or one can be degraded by association. So therefore, if one is intelligent, one discriminates as to what is good and what is bad and takes on that kind of association. If we want to become drunkards, if we decide that that's where pleasure lies, then all we have to do is go to the pub and associate with that kind of people. And we'll become just like that. Ajamil, that's the example of someone degraded by a bad association. Therefore the Bhagavatam always recommends the association of the Mahat, or the great souls, for opening the gates of salvation. To associate with persons engaged in lording it over the material world means to enter into the darkest region of hell. One should try to raise himself by the association of the great soul. That is the way of the perfection of life. So Prabhupada is explaining things in the purports in depth, very pertinent points, and yet the philosophy is moving on and describing the coverings of the living entity and how the coverings are placed according to one's karma. So there are so many different species of life that the Lord creates, imposes upon the living entity through the agency of Lord Brahma. And then, as Srila Swami comments on the next verse, we're understanding here the creation in summary. Then, as Srila Swami comments, as creator, Vishnu Lord Brahma is creator and Lord Vishnu is described as the maintainer. So he, in text 42, he, the personality of Godhead, is the maintainer of all the universe. So he comes himself to maintain. Just like a wealthy man, when he's going to create his house, he doesn't do that himself. He doesn't get the hammers and nails and the 2x4s and bang the hammers and put up this and that. No, he gets someone else to do that. And through his potency of his money, he has it done. So similarly, Krishna does it through Lord Brahma. He creates the world. And similarly, as we'll hear, when it's time to destroy the house, he doesn't get there with the hammers and the sledgehammer and break it himself. Again, he empowers someone else to do it. But when it comes to maintaining the house or living in the house, that he does himself. So similarly, Lord Vishnu himself comes as the maintainer to make sure everything is done properly for the purpose of the living entities removing the covering, understanding their eternal nature. So he sets up the laws of the material world in this way. So he, the personality of Godhead, as the maintainer of all the universe, appears in different incarnations after establishing the creation. So he establishes the creation as Lord Vishnu, he creates it as Lord Brahma, and then he himself comes through the agency of Jiradakshai Vishnu. He comes himself and incarnates in so many forms. And we've heard in the earlier chapters in this canto and in the first canto, we've heard of some of the different avatars, lila avatars, where the Lord comes to Pritra Naya Sadhanam Vinashaya Sudaskritam to establish the principles of religion, etc. to save the fallen conditioned souls. And he advents himself amongst the humans, the non-humans, and the demigods. Thereafter, text 43, and Srila Swami describes how this describes the destruction, that the Lord does that through Lord Rudra. Thereafter, at the end of the millennium, the Lord himself, in the form of Rudra, Lord Shiva, the destroyer, will annihilate the complete creation as the wind displaces the clouds. So this is how the Lord deals with the material world. He comes himself as Lord Vishnu. He creates the coverings through his energies, the Virata Rupa. He maintains it through Lord Vishnu. He creates it through Brahma. He destroys it through Lord Shiva, Rudra. But he himself remains in the spiritual world enjoying transcendental pastimes. So therefore, in text 44, Itam vavena katito bhagavan bhagavatama netam vavena hiparam drastumahanti suraya. The great transcendentalists thus describe the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is how the Lord deals with the material world. He is actually himself independent from the material world. He is not the Virata Rupa. He is not, nothing is different from him, but yet he is separate. And therefore, although the transcendentalists describe the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in this way, the pure devotees deserve to hear more glorious things in transcendence beyond these features. So this is the secondary activities of the Lord. When we think of God and his activities, we usually think of what terms in most religious affiliations, what terms do they use to define God? He is the creator. He is Jehovah, the lawgiver. He is the, what is God? What, the all-powerful. Yeah. Control. What in Bangla, the Christians, when they use, because there's so many names of God in Sanskrit. So the one that when they, their God is called Ishwar. Ishwar. Yes? Huh? God the Father, right. So all these have to do with his secondary activities in relationship to the material world. But yet, if he's the creator of the material world, that means he exists separate from the material world. So what does he do other than deal with the material world? So if he is the creator of the material world and existed before the material world, so what was he doing before? Just waiting? Taking this, what was he doing? Bored, reading books, what was he doing? Playing video games or something, just it's not time yet to create the material world. Of course in Australia they think he was surfing or something like that. But no, he was doing the most wonderful things in the spiritual world, and he's still doing those wonderful things. So the pure devotees who actually don't only deal with Krishna's dealings with the material world, which Krishna does through his energies of the guna avatars, Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, they want to see more glorious things in transcendence beyond these features. So what in the material world, what is the Lord's activities? So in the beginning of this section, not of this section, but in the beginning of the chapter, sort of in the middle of the chapter, after the Adi Daivaka, Adi Bhautika, and Adi Atmika Purushas were described, and how everyone is dependent upon Krishna. The point was that was being made, and all this was to actually make this point, that the Lord himself is independent from the material world, because all the nine principles of the Bhagavatam, the nine topics of the Bhagavatam, have to do with the material world. Even the avatars, the Lord's descent into the material world. But he himself is independent of the material world and exists in the spiritual world and performs the most wonderful transcendental pastimes there. So in text 45 describes Nasya kamani jamado parasyanu vidyate katritva patisi dartam mayaya rupitam hitat. There is no direct engineering by the Lord for the creation and destruction of the material world. What is described in the Vedas about his direct interference is simply to counteract the idea that material nature is the creator. So when we hear that God creates and that God is the destroyer and God is the lawgiver, and God is the father and God is the controller of the material world, this is explained like this only so we don't think that the Visarga creation or the secondary creation is arising out of itself. Because the secondary creation, the creation is actually coming from the Sarga creation, which is all done from the Supreme Lord. So sometimes the Vedas and all scriptures will define God as the creator. Because if we don't do that, we'll think that material, if we don't hear that, we'll think that material nature is the creator. And that type of atheism is completely wrong. While this type of explanation that God is the Lord giver, God is the Father, God is the Creator, it is correct, but not exactly accurate in the sense that he doesn't himself directly do these things. He has them done. Just like all the governmental agencies, they work under the potency of the president or prime minister, but it's not that the prime minister arrests somebody on the street. No. That is done through the potency of the police department, which is not different from the potency, the power of the chief executive head. So Krishna indirectly engineers and does everything. He empowers, like the representative of a country in the United Nations. He's empowered by the country to vote yes or no on behalf of the country. But once that empowerment is removed, he can't say Australia condemns China, because he can only speak for himself with his own potency. But once he's empowered to speak on behalf of the country and represents it, then what he says has so much weight. So similarly, the living entities who Krishna works through have so much potency by Krishna's arrangement. And that's how Krishna works through them. He himself is off away in the spiritual world. So Prabhupada explains in his purport over here. Oh, first, Jiva Goswami says, in his dealings with the material world, the Lord has no attachment, nor does he undergo any change due to matter. He is not... This is actually an important philosophical point, that the Lord has no vikara or change, but it is his energies. This is Achintya Beda Beda. This is the difference between Achintya Beda Beda and Beda Beda of the Nimbarka Sampradaya. So Prabhupada explains in the purport here. The Vedic direction for creation, maintenance, and destruction of the material world is this. Yato vai manibhutani jayante yena jatani jivanti yat prayanti abhisham vivashanti. Everything is created by Brahman. After creation, everything is maintained by Brahman, and after annihilation, everything is conserved in Brahman. Gross materialists without any knowledge of Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan conclude material nature to be the ultimate cause of the material manifestation. And the modern scientists also share this view that the material nature is the ultimate cause of all the manifestations of the material world. This view is refuted by all Vedic literature. The Vedanta philosophy mentions that Brahman is the fountainhead of all creation, maintenance, and destruction. In Srimad Bhagavatam, the natural commentation on the Vedanta philosophy says, Janma yasya yataha anvaya litarasthateshu abhigyasarat. Inert matter is undoubtedly energy with potential to interact, but it has no initiative of its own. Srimad Bhagavatam therefore comments on the aphorism Janma Yasya by saying Abhigya and Sarat. The Supreme Brahman is not inert matter, but he is Supreme Consciousness and is independent. Therefore, inert matter cannot be the ultimate cause of the creation, maintenance, and destruction of the material world. Sometimes we become sick of hearing this, but we should know that the forces of atheism in this world, they firmly believe this. And they are in control of the educational systems. That means the children grow up believing this. The process of evolution, that what happened, there is, of course they can't explain it, but they say that we evolved. When we think of evolution, we think of that we evolved from what? Huh?
Monkeys.
Apes and monkeys. I thought you said mice. I was wondering what your genealogical tree was. Thought it was too much association with Gopinath the cat. But they don't say how did suddenly from matter something alive came. They cannot say how suddenly life came from matter miraculously. Some lightning hit or something like that. So if life can come from matter, how come we never see it happening? Suddenly the legs of the table start stretching and walking walking away. And the ears of corn start saying, "What did you say?" And the tongues of your shoes, because shoes have tongues, yeah? Don't they? Not Birkenstocks. And what else is there? the teeth of a saw start biting you? No, these things don't happen. Because life, because the soul has to be there for it to occur. It is the life comes from life. So the materialistic people, even though they have no, they pride themselves of being so scientific, they have no scientific proof that ever life can come from matter. But there's so much proof of matter coming from life. You plant, you take a seed of a lemon tree or something. So does it taste like lemon in any way? No. And you put it in the ground, it's a the soul is in there, and it grows, and lemons come out of it in time. And all the ingredients were not there. The things that the lemon tree, the sourness, the acid, acidity, the pips, the this, the that, they weren't there before. So it's due to the life that this matter is produced. So therefore, to combat this atheistical theory, which is non-scientific, the Vedic scriptures will speak that the Lord is behind all this creation. Inert matter cannot be the ultimate cause of the creation, maintenance, and destruction of the material world. Superficially, material nature appears to be the cause of creation, maintenance, and destruction. But material nature is set into motion for creation by the Supreme Conscious Being, the Personality of Godhead. He is the background of all creation, maintenance, and destruction. He is there in the background. The process of creation and annihilation described in summary herein is the regulative principle during the duration of Brahma's one day. It is also the regulative principle of the creation of the Mahat, in which the material nature is dispersed. So all these different creations, all these different living entities that are produced, and their deaths, and their times, and the changings of their coverings, all this takes place within time. Huge, huge amounts of time. We usually think ourselves so big and so important and so powerful, but when we understand this universal form and how vast it is, and the creation, how vast it is, and time, how vast it is, how in this verse is to describe the Mahakalpa, Vikalpa, and Kalpas. The creations during the day of Brahma, during the life of Brahma, and during the time of Mahavishnu. And even the smallest of those, the kalpas, are so vast, millions and millions and zillions of years. And here we're thinking that we are so important, well, we're only going to live 50, 60, 70, 80 years, maybe 100 years. Which isn't even the blinking of an eye in eternal time. So how is it possible that something that lasts for not even a flick is important? How could something that's so tiny be significant? So this is, so therefore, these things are put into the Bhagavatam to understand the vastness of our covering, so we can understand that all this is so, this whole material creation is so powerful, and it is coming from just one little part of the Supreme, and therefore He is powerful and we are insignificant, because as long as we think that we are powerful, we will not surrender and perform devotional service to the Lord. But once we understand we are insignificant, then we can pray properly. So therefore, Mahaprabhu says, Trinadapi Sinichena, Turodapi Sihisnina, Amanina Manadena, Kirtaniya Sadhari. That one, that humility is the prerequisite for continuous chanting. And yet, due to the illusory energy, due to the coverings over us, even though we are so tiny, we think ourselves so important and so substantial and so powerful, and everything that we want is so... So what? That's really what it is. So what? You want it. Like little children who don't have any perspective of what reality is. So therefore, all this is described. So it is the regulative principle in the creation of Mahat in which the material nature is dispersed. So all this in time, in text 47, Sukha describes, I shall in due course explain the measurement of time. So all this matter, things of matter, exist in time. So all the measurement of time and its gross and subtle features, with the specific symptoms of each, he says he will explain. But for the present, let me explain unto you the Padma Kalpa, one of the different kalpas, days of Lord Brahma. So Sukadeva is saying that he will explain this because earlier on in chapter 8, Maharaj Prickett, in text 12 and text 13, he asked about time. He said, please explain the duration of time between creation and annihilation and that of other subsidiary creations, as well as the nature of time indicated by the sound of past, present, and future. Also, please explain the duration and measurement of life in the different living beings known as the demigods, the human beings, the different planets of the universe. Please explain the cause of the different durations of time, both short and long, as well as the beginning of time following the course of action. So because Sukadev Goswami, because Maharaj Prickett had asked about time in chapter 8 now, Sukadev is saying that he's given us a which we will get to. Shonaka Rishi, so now we're going back to the, because there, we were hearing Brahma talk to Narada, and that talk was narrated by Sukadev speaking to Prickett Maharaj, and that was narrated by Sutta Goswami speaking to Shonaka Rishi. So Shonaka Rishi, hearing all about the creation, inquired from Sutta Goswami about Vidura. For Sutta Goswami had previously informed him how Vidura had left home, leaving aside all his relatives who were very difficult to read. So that took place way back in the first canto, chapter 13. We heard how Vidura returned after being on pilgrimage for many years and after having received instructions from Maitreya, and he preached so strongly to Dhritarashtra. This was just after Krishna had left the planet. He preached so strongly to Dhritarashtra that Dhritarashtra left home, left a comfortable place in the palace and prepared for death. So after six chapters, and then these in the first canto, and these 10 chapters in the second canto, now Shonaka Rishi said, remember way back then you were talking about Vidura and how he came so inspired in spiritual knowledge after hearing from Maitreya? Well, why did Vidura leave home? Why did he leave the palace and why did he return? And Shonaka Rishi said, please let us know what topics were discussed between Vidura and Maitreya, who talked on transcendental subjects, and what was inquired by Vidura and replied by Maitreya. Also, please let us know for the reason for Vidura's giving up the connection of his family members. Why did he again come home? Please also let us know the activities of Vidura while he was in the places of pilgrimage. And Sutta Goswami replied by saying, I shall now explain to you the very subject explained by the great sage in answer to King Prickett's inquiries. Please hear them attentively. And that's the end of the second canto. But before we do that, before we speak more on that, we'll just hear the purport, Prabhupada's purport to text 49 and 50, which
where Shonaka Rishi is inquiring about Vidura. Sri Suta Goswami was narrating the topics of the creation and destruction of the material world. But it appears that the rishis headed by Shonaka were more inclined to hear of transcendental subjects, because after all, the material world isn't transcendental. They wanted to hear of transcendental subjects which are on a higher level than the physical. There are two classes of men, namely those too addicted to the gross body in the material world, and others on the higher level who are interested more in transcendental knowledge. Srimad Bhagavatam gives facility to everyone, both to the materialist and to the transcendentalist. By hearing Srimad Bhagavatam in the matter of the Lord's glorious activities both in the material world and in the transcendental world, men can derive equal benefit. They can advance in spiritual life. The materialists are more interested in the physical laws and how they're acting, and they see wonders in those physical glamours. Sometimes, due to physical glamours, they forget the glories of the Lord. They should know definitely that physical activities and their wonders are all initiated by the Lord. They are begun by the Lord. The rose in the garden gradually takes its shape and color to become beautiful and sweet, not by a blind physical law, although it appears like that. Behind that physical law is the direction of the complete consciousness of the Supreme Lord. Otherwise, things cannot take shape so systematically. When there are laws that are so strict that govern this world, that implies that there is a law maker who is so powerful that he imposes his will upon material nature. You try to make material nature work in a different way. See how successful you are. We can't do it because we don't have the power, nor do we have the intelligence. So when the material nature is working in such an organized way, we can just imagine the intelligence and the power of that Supreme Person. The artist draws a picture of a rose very nicely, with all attention and artistic sense, and yet it does not become as perfect as a real rose. If that is the real fact, how can we say that the real rose has taken its shape without intelligence behind the beauty? This sort of conclusion is due to a poor fund of knowledge. One must know from the above description of creation and annihilation that the Supreme Consciousness, being omnipresent, can take care of everything with perfect attention. That is the fact of the omnipresence of the Supreme Lord. Persons still more foolish than the gross materialists, however, claim to be transcendentalists. So Prabhupada is saying those materialists are so foolish, they think that there is nothing spiritual in the world and everything is just happening automatically by chance. But he's saying even more foolish than the gross materialists are the transcendentalists who claim to have such supreme all-pervading consciousness but offer no proof. In other words, the so-called transcendentalists who say, I am God, I am the Supreme, that's even more foolish. Such foolish persons cannot know what is going on beyond the next wall, yet they are falsely proud of possessing the cosmic, all-pervading consciousness of the Supreme Person. For them also, hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam is a great help. It will open their eyes to see that simply by claiming Supreme Consciousness, one does not become supremely conscious. One has to prove in the physical world that he has such supreme consciousness. The rishis of Namacharanya, however, were above the gross materialists and the false transcendentalists, and thus they were always anxious to know the real truth in transcendental matters as discussed by authorities. So they wanted to hear about, not only about the Lord's dealings in the material world, but they wanted to hear about the Lord's transcendental dealings in the spiritual world, and gradually all that will be revealed. So thus end the second canto of the Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Shonaka Rishi Sita Goswami ki jai,
Maharaj Cricket, Sukadev Goswami Ki Jai.